investors have become completely spoiled. And they've relied on stock market appreciation to augment their retirement plans. I manage money for a living. I can hear a small percentage of my investors, but I think it's a lot more prevalent outside of Pentaport. People are saying, because they're actually losing a lot of money outside of Pentaport, we're not doing that. They're saying, well, what's going on with my portfolio? What am I gonna do? I need to make 10, 20% per annum, and you lost me 20 to 30% last year. What are you doing for me this year? Are you gonna do that again? And the answer is yes. And it could get a lot worse.
This is Kaiser Johnson with Liberty and Finance, and this is the Miles Franklin Weekly Special for February 28th through March 7th, 2023, while supplies last. This week we feature two coins from the Royal Canadian Mint, the sought-after 2013 Silver Pronghorn Antelope at $3.99 over spot, and the 2022 Silver Maple at $3.40 over spot. The Silver Pronghorn Antelope was made for the Low Mintage Limited Run Wildlife Series, where just 1 million coins were minted over the course of 6 months, and then never issued again. With a focus on beautiful design, a face value of $5 Canadian, and RCM's strict 4/9 fine purity, these coins further add a degree of rarity to the mix. They come 25 to a tube, 500 to a box, and are available at just $3.99 over spot. We also have 2022 Silver Maples on special. Silver Maples were the first silver sovereign coins to be minted at 4/9 fine purity, and remain one of the most in-demand coins today. They come 25 to a tube, 500 to a box, and are available at the lowest premium we've seen in more than a year, at just $3.40 over spot. Both coins this week are also IRA eligible, and if you'd like to learn more about a precious metals IRA, call us, and we'll be happy to help you in that process. To order these specials or any of the many other options we have available, call us at 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237. We're available after hours and on weekends, and we look forward to speaking with you.
Welcome back to Liberty and Finance. We're always glad to have this returning guest. Michael Pento is the founder of Pento Portfolio Strategies. He's joining us today, this Thursday, March 2nd, 2023. Mike, thanks for coming back on Liberty and Finance.
It's always a pleasure being with you, Dunnigan. You know that.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of fun today. We're trying to keep our chins up in the face of what seem to be growing storm clouds in a lot of people's financial lives, and they're concerned about the future of their abilities, their family's ability to survive and thrive in the environment that we have before us going forward, and the trends that are in place. Some of the trends that are confusing to many people is this countercurrents of inflation versus deflation. And in the face of that, what is stagflation and how that can affect people? Because we've been seeing a lot of price increases in the past several years. Everybody says the buck ain't worth what it used to be. So that means that their savings, their retirement, their earnings are shrinking in value. And yet we're being told, watch out below. Here comes tumbling of the major stock markets, the real estate market rolling over, bond markets. We seem to be seeing inflation and deflation at the same time. Can you explain to us what the big takeaways are for what you see going on and what those trends are going to be going forward?
Okay, so good to be with you as usual. So I understand the angst of consumers. And though I'm not in the bottom two quartiles, or actually say quintiles of consumers, they are particularly getting crushed. And you look at the lowest, the bottom rungs of the income spectrum, they're getting crushed. And they're getting crushed particularly because of inflation. Their real incomes have fallen 22 months in a row. But now joining those people in distress, economic distress, are those in the higher ends of the income strata. And they have been living not off of incomes. They've been living off asset price appreciation. You think about total market cap of equities to GDP hit over 200% in January of 2022. So a little over a year ago. And so people with stock portfolios were like, wow, this is wonderful. I don't even have to work anymore. This is great. Or the people that next door, in my circle of friends, like, oh, I own five houses and I'm renting them out. And not only am I getting like record rents, I have these five homes and the principal has appreciated 20% the last few years. And that's all laid at the blame and the feet of our central bank, who has kept rates falling for 40 years. Interest rates fell from 20% all the way down to zero. And 10 of the last 14 years, they've been at zero. Now, you're going to have a zero handle in front of them. You know, 0.0 or 0.9, whatever. They had a zero handle for 10 of the last 14 years. And you ask these people, you know, hey, what do you do for a living? Well, I don't do anything. I own stuff. It's like, you know, reminiscent of Gordon Gekko. Remember the movie Wall Street? Like, I own. I don't create. I own. Well, you're not doing anything. You just own stuff. Well, you were able to make a very good living by owning things, just your capital appreciation on your stocks and your income from your houses that you got at, you know, nothing down from your bank. So that created this bifurcation in the economy where you had the very rich and you had the very poor. But now all of them are hurting because home prices have started to roll over. They're down about 4.4% year over year, national home price index. So they've started to roll over. You still have year over year huge declines in the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, you know, double digit declines. But that's not over with. That's not over with. Because you still have people, Dunnigan, debating on CNBC and on Bloomberg. Where are we going with inflation? What's happening? Are we? I think the zeitgeist today is, hey, we are having a bout with intractable inflation. It's just going to keep going higher and higher. The Fed can't get a hold of it. I disagree with that vehemently. I want to be very clear about this. We've had a very big battle with inflation. We are heading for a very big battle with disinflation and deflation. And then on the other end of that, we are going to see inflation in the United States such that can only be dreamed of in the past, not even imagined in the past. And I can unpack that, but I want to let you in here. But that's the scenario I see. I see inflation now. Of course, the damages are still suffering from citizens of this country. Now it's disinflation, right after, you know, right on the cusp of disinflation and deflation, especially in asset prices. And then we're going to see the Fed blink reticently, though, back into ZERP and QE. And then it's the sky's the limit for inflation because the Fed will not be able to fool anyone, Dunnigan. They are not able to raise interest rates high enough to accurately and effectively fight inflation for very long. Just can't happen.
Often the Fed frames the discussion of the fight with inflation in terms of one where they use primarily the tool of interest rates. What about other tools that would be much more direct and powerful at reducing the money supply, Can you talk to us about that?
Did you ask? I'm applauding. Did you come up with that question yourself, or was it from a viewer?
Actually, I'm kind of leveraging it. Gregor Mannarino has been harping on this for months. He's been saying they could stop this today if they wanted to, but they don't want to, so they're just going to do this fake shadow war against it. But go ahead and.
Well, Greg Mannarino he's a friend of mine. He's a beautiful person. I got to give him a lot of compliments because he nailed it. He's nailed it. Okay, yes, the Fed is doing a lot to fight inflation. They've raised interest rates from 0% in March of 22 to 5.25% by March of this year. Okay, wonderful. That's great. That's a lot. That's a rate of change basis is a lot. But why in God's holy and good name, and I didn't use that in vain because it is a holy and good name, if you really want to help out this country and remove the barriers between the very rich who just own things and people working at Walmart and at McDonald's who have suffered for 2 years almost of negative real wages and don't own houses, multiple houses, and don't have a stock account. You want to close that gap, which is the right thing to do. Okay. You want people to earn a living based on their productivity and their ingenuity, not because they inherited money or because they got a loan from the bank or the condition of where how they were born. If you want to do that, you should really want to fight inflation. And if you really want to fight inflation, attack the money supply. And I didn't ask Greg about this. I'm assuming this is what he's talking about. Attack the base money supply. So why in God's good and holy name did you, the Federal Reserve increased the monetary base from $700 billion in 2008 to $9 trillion. And you were still building it in the early part of 22 while we were fighting inflation. You still were buying mortgage-backed securities. Why did you do that? And why is it only down to $8.3 trillion? Why are you not? Why didn't Jerome Powell, if he was really and truly going to fight inflation, come out and say, you know what, I'm going to raise interest rates, but I'm also going to drain all of this excess gambling liquidity from Wall Street and take that balance sheet from $8.3 trillion down to $4 or $5 trillion, where it was before the pandemic. He should be burning the money supply like mad, especially because Janet Yellen is draining the Treasury General account at the Fed, which is offsetting a lot of this QT that's going on. That's what he should be doing, but he's not.
Also, when we spoke with Alistair McLeod this week, he was talking about a current recurrent crisis in the Japanese central bank's ability to defend their currency and their bond. They've drawn lines in the sand at various levels, 0.25% and 0.5%. And this week it was over, for 2 days at least, has been over 0.5% on there. And your thoughts on the emergence of, is this in fact a bond crisis in progress in Japan, or what is the situation in Japan and how is that important to the rest of us?
Yeah, this is another great question. So I'm watching this assiduously because you can't find any other greater example on the planet of central bank idiocy and lunacy than you can find with Mr. Kuroda, head of central bank. He's leaving, thank God, but you're finding somebody else in there coming in. It's probably just as bad. So here's the philosophy. Let's just keep printing yen unlimitedly in unlimited fashion and buy an unlimited amount of Japanese government bonds, JGBs, to pin their 10-year note at 0.5%. It was 0.25%. Then it was raised to 0.5%, shot up there immediately, and now it's 0.505%. That's the latest. They're having a lot of trouble keeping that. And there's there's a very good reason why they're having trouble, because they have well over a quadrillion yen in outstanding debt, and their inflation rate keeps going higher. It's setting multi-decade highs. It's well over 4% now and rising. So this is a little incongruency here, where you have investors trying to be happy with a 0.5% going out 10 years, which is negative 4% in real terms going out 10 years, really, the real loss. And that doesn't include the fact that you could have a bond market implosion there. If this new central banker coming in, get his name right now, taking the place of Kuroda, says, so we were at 0.25%, we're going to go to 0.5%, now we're going to go to 0.75%, then 1%. And the bond market, the vigilante, is going to say, wait a second, I get what's going on here. I'm just going to keep on shorting JGBs till the cows come home, because I know I'm going to make money, because the price is going to plunge and the yields are going to skyrocket. And done again, that could drag up yields higher across the entire globe. If Japanese investors, who are the largest buyers, or at least one of the largest buyers of treasuries, say, wait a second, I was getting nothing, next to nothing, on my JGBs. And then I had a currency risk. But what happens if the JGBs actually rose to be more competitive with treasuries, say around 4 or 5%? Well, you wouldn't have anybody. You wouldn't have any Japanese investors buying U.S. treasuries. They'd be selling them and buying JGBs. So at that level, maybe, if they wanted to accept 0% real return for 10 years. So I'm watching that very closely. I don't think they can go down that road, because Japanese is really a retirement village island with very little natural resources. If they actually wanted to have their interest rates reflect some semblance of reality, it would be closer to 10%, not 0.5%. So it would implode their entire economy. That's another example of how we are wedded, unfortunately, to these central bankers and their whims, and we parse their their FOMC meeting minutes like we're reading scripture. Like, was it a period or was it a semicolon? Was it an and or was it a but? You know, this because they control the whole thing. There's a complete artificial edifice known as the American economy, Japanese economy, European economy, and the Chinese economy. Throughout the developed world, they're all fake and phony. And the free market has been usurped by central banks, fiscal and monetary policies of these G7 nations.
Let's bring it back home. And you were starting to do that. If the Japanese central bank loses control over the yield of their bonds because people start dumping them and they can't defend that 0.5% max anymore, then you said that might drag other bonds up globally. And you also mentioned about how there's interplay because people have the ability to decide whether they want to invest in U.S. bonds versus Japanese bonds and so on. Can you talk to us about what the U.S. bond market health is right now, what the trend is there, and how, if Japan goes off the rails here further, how that could directly affect Americans?
Well, we're looking at choices here. I don't make the decision, neither do you. We are at the whims, as I just stated, of central bankers and politicians. Well, what's the pain you want to take? Let's go back to Japan for a second. What do you want to do? Do you want to continue to print yen at a manic pace and keep that yield pegged at 0.5% and create runaway inflation? I mean, that's what they're doing now. So in other words, I don't have to guess what they're going to do a year from now. I have to react and invest my money every day for my clients. So right now, they're going the inflationary route. When inflation waxes so onerously high in Japan and starts to destroy their economy, they'll switch like we did here in the United States when we had inflation heading towards double digits. The way they measure it was really 20%. It was destroying the economy and the natives were getting restless. Well, that's what the Fed did. They decided to attack inflation. But when you attack inflation, just the same way as it's going to happen in Japan, when they finally say, okay, we're going to attack inflation and we're going to pursue the reality or the natural course of reality, which is disinflation and deflation. When they go down that route, then they're going to destroy the economy. They're going to melt down asset prices and then they're going to cause a deflationary depression. That's where we're headed here in the United States. So when that doesn't work, when that becomes the salient problem, they'll switch back to inflation. It's this pendulum. That's why I created the IDEC model, inflation, deflation, the economic cycle model. I'm just investing according to the very wild and chaotic swings of inflation and deflation. Again, here in the United States, let's take it back to home again. We had a disinflation or a quiescent inflation environment for many, many years, sub 2%. All the inflation was in asset prices. Everybody was happy except for the lower two quintiles. And then when that became a real problem for everybody, the economy as a whole, blatantly obvious that the Fed couldn't, ignore it. You couldn't, make a scrambled egg breakfast any longer. That's when the Fed sprung into action. So now we're pursuing this reality where you raise interest rates from 0 to 5%, draining balance sheet. Should be drained more aggressively if you really wanted to stop the gambling in Bed Bath & Beyond and every single bankrupt tech stock. So what we're doing now is we're fighting inflation. That's going to end very badly. There's going to be a truncated period of deflation and sharp recession in this country. That'll last for a while. The Fed's going to put a brave face, say, we're going to go through this. It's going to be extremely, it'll be transitory, just like inflation was. They'll get that wrong. We're going to keep plummeting as an economy, and then they're going to capitulate and go back into ZERP and QE. And then we're going to have this another big, massive inflation bubble. The next time that happens, though, and you want to bring it back to treasuries, the next time that happens, the Fed is not going to fool anybody. It's going to happen with the sting of inflation fresh in everybody's minds. And when that happens, I think bond yields are going to go intractably higher and real interest rates will fall. Because the Fed is going to be buying treasuries to keep that yield lower by creating a massive amount of inflation as they do. So you're going to have a fall in real interest rates. And that's when I think you know, the gold market is interesting to me now. It's going to be a must own, you know, Y2K internet bubble kind of asset, I think, possibly, when that situation happens.
Another thing you've talked about in the past, and you brushed up against it, I think, here when you talked about Bed Bath & Beyond and other companies that are going to be struggling, tech zombies, is that the zombie companies that are not making any real profits now and are not likely to, and have huge debts to service. There have been some articles come out recently, I think it was Mises Institute and some others, that talked about the zombie companies that people don't even realize yet, but they will, like Carvana, that never profitable, Impossible Meat, and others that were kind of riding on this idea of kind of like an Amazon model, assuming that they're going to just grow rapidly forever and eventually consolidate the industry or whatever. But that there are many that have gotten away with not being profitable because it was so inexpensive to do so in a low interest rate environment, et cetera. And that the realities, the grim realities of a hard, bare cycle haven't really sunk into people, that they're still, quote unquote, buying the dips, et cetera. Can you talk to us about the phenomenon of zombie companies that people haven't realized yet?
Sure. So let's define zombie companies. A zombie company technically is a company that has to issue new debt to pay interest on existing debt. So not issuing debt to expand, you know, buy capital, expand capital production, to pay off old debt. They're just making interest payments. So this is a Bloomberg study. 32% of companies in the Russell 3000 don't make any money. And what did you see in January? What were the companies that went bazooka, crazy? Were those companies profitless tech? Was really in the vanguard in the January rally, which by the way is almost all but totally dissipated now. In the S&P 500. That's the evidence that Mannarino is referring to, and I'm referring to. That's the evidence of too much money and gambling on Wall Street. You would think that heading into an economic slowdown, these companies, 32% on the Russell 3000, don't make any money. They have to issue new debt at much higher interest rates to function. That's where all the layoffs are going to come from. That's what I'm talking about when I say, you know, the lagged effects of 5% interest rates from zero, that less than a year ago, interest rates were zero. They're going to be 5 to 5.25 this month, probably closer to 5. But then going to 5.25 a little bit thereafter, you know, by May. There's lagged effects of about a year here. We haven't even begun to feel that in these corporations. But when these corporations, these zombie companies, which employ a heck of a lot of people in this country, they're going under because they cannot afford to pay that kind of interest on their debt. They don't make any money. I mean, when money was virtually free, it was no problem. When high yield was, you know, the spreads to treasuries were, you know, this wide, it wasn't a problem. But now there is a little bit more of a spread to treasuries, and the treasury yield has gone way up. So the borrowing costs have surged. So you're going to see a lot of these companies fold in 2023 and 2024. And that's why the steepness of this recession could be even approaching a depression before Powell realizes and relents to the fact that, hey, you, the central bankers, starting with Bernanke, actually want to go back to Greenspan. All of these central bankers, Yellen in there too, and of course Powell, one of the worst offenders is Jerome Powell, buying mortgage-backed securities in March of 2022 when home prices are already up, you know, 20% year over year, 2 years in a row. And you also saw inflation rising towards double digits. We're addicted to this monetary lunacy. And when you remove it, asset prices plunge. It's exactly what's happening now, just at the cusp of it. We had phase one of the market collapse was just a reaction to the risk premium going from, you know, a healthy 3-4% down to almost 1%. You know, the competition that stocks have to bonds. That was part one. Part two of this bear market, which is going to be brutal, is going to be all about an earnings and economic collapse. That's ahead of us.
And we need to talk about real estate in that when you have those massive layoffs happening and you have borrowing costs increasing, et cetera, talk to us about what you see ahead in the real estate market, especially for those who may have. We saw there was a proliferation of like Airbnb and Vrbo's, but we've also had huge institutional buying by Blackstone and others up to 25%. Can you talk to us about the real estate market and how that plays out in this scenario over the next couple of years?
Yeah, Blackstone and Wall Street and investors owned 20 to 25% of all new homes sold in the last 2 years. So there's a lot. Some people say there's no inventory. No inventory. No, there's a lot of supply out there. It's going to be dumped when home prices start rolling over. If you own, if you're Blackstone et al., any even my friends who own five houses with not very little down, when your home price begins to fall and the renters start dropping out, the calculation is easy. I don't need five houses. I'm getting rid of them as fast as possible to capture that gain. That implied gain that I've had over the past few years. So you can see a tremendous amount of inventory flood the market. Plenty of supply while the demand just isn't there. So home prices are starting to roll over. Parts of the country, they're down significantly, especially on the West Coast. Not so much here in the Sun Belt yet, but I think that's going to follow soon. Down 4.4%, as I mentioned, nationally. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Because the home price to income ratio, Dunnigan, was much higher at the apex this last few months than it was in 2005, which was the previous peak. Remember the great financial crisis, the global financial crisis, and the real estate bubble that knocked out the world economy and brought down the global financial system? Well, home prices were not only nominally much, much higher, but in relation to incomes, they were much higher than they were in 2005. Which was the previous week. So yeah, we have a lot of inventory and a long way to go to fall. And that's when when you really think about it, what is Powell supposed to be doing here? What's the purpose of the Fed? It's the banker's bank. He's there to protect banks. He's going to bail out banks. And what do banks hold? A whole heck of a lot of both bank holding companies and the shadow banking system. They own real estate.
Well, if the Fed has the real estate bankers' backs, then does he have everyone's backs in that regards by proxy? Are we not going to see a complete washout of the real estate market because the Fed is going to have to step up and try to rescue it once again?
Again, this comes back to what I said about making these postulates that go out a year or so when you don't have to do that. So what's happening right now? We moved from inflation to a period of slight disinflation. What's coming right now, the next 0 to 3 months out, which is the bailiwick of my model, we're heading from disinflation to recession to depression and deflation. That's where we're headed. Now, I don't know when Jerome Powell is going to react. I can't pick a time. I will tell you, I can guarantee you, virtually guarantee you, that he will react in a big way. When the credit markets freeze, when you can't float commercial paper any longer, when you have problems in the repo market, when the shadow banking system starts to melt down, those are all things that are going to happen, no doubt. But when that date happens, I don't know. I'm thinking it could be towards the end of 2023, the second half of 23 this year. That's when I'll react. I want to see what he does and how he reliquifies the financial system. Right now, by the way, as of the date that you gave very succinctly at the start of this program on Thursday, early March, we have a financial conditions are actually easing. And the spread between high yield and treasuries is contracting. So the imminent collapse of the stock market is just not nigh. It's not around the corner. I think you're going to see in the next few months really slowing economic data, even in the non-farm payroll report. And so when you start to get the credit market come under fire, when you start seeing back-to-back negative non-farm payroll reports. When you have problems in money markets, that's when Powell reacts. I don't really have to know the date, but I can tell you I'll know when, because I'm going to look at those things I just mentioned, and when they start to come under duress, that is when I'll react, and I'll know that the Fed's going to come with a, you know, an artillery of things such as, you know, lowering interest rates. I think there'll be a unholy union between Yellen and Powell doing another form of helicopter money. And then you're going to see, and this is the key here. That is when you're going to see inflation just become unmoored. It's not going to go from 9 to 6 to 4, which is where I think it's going to go next. It's going to go from 4 to 15 to 50. And then you're going to have another problem on your hands. So you see how this roller coaster is operating now. Now, I made these predictions back in 2012 that in my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse, that the U.S. economy is becoming more and more addicted to fiscal and monetary control. The usurpation of the free market is going to become complete. And then you're going to have these wild swings between inflation and deflation. It's exactly what we're seeing. I think it's going to continue. And I think these periods are going to grow more intense over time, these cycles.
That's what I'm hearing from you. Rick Rule was also talking about his interview is titled Buckle Up, Volatility Ahead. And he talked about these swings becoming more and more extreme. And the wreckage, it's like having a bull in a china shop, I guess, the wreckage in people's lives of any plans, any responsible behavior that they had made trying to prepare for their future and everything can get just knocked this way and that way when these swings happen. It's so challenging for many of us to figure out how to position ourselves. I guess that's maybe where you come in. So how can people get a hold of you if they want help with that?
Well, I would say one thing before we wrap it up, if you don't mind. Investors become completely spoiled, and they've relied on stock market appreciation to augment their retirement plans more so than ever before. I mean, the idea was, hey, I can make 10, 20% per year and I can retire at 60, 65 because my income is my the quality of my job has gone down significantly. My income has gone down significantly, and in real terms, it's plunged. So I'm relying on my home price appreciation and my stock account. And what's happening is, you see, I manage money for a living. I can hear a small percentage of my investors, but I think it's a lot more prevalent outside of Pentaport. People are saying, because they're actually losing a lot of money outside of Pentaport, we're not doing that. They're saying, what's going on with my portfolio? What am I going to do? I need to make 10, 20% per annum, and you lost me 20 to 30% last year. What are you doing for me this year? Are you going to do that again? And the answer is yes. And it could get a lot worse. And the reason is, as I said before, zero interest rates for 10 of the last 14 years and a steady decline from 20% of 1981 to zero in 2022. That's what spoiled this country and this country's citizen, to rely on, instead of a growing, healthy economy, one that's balanced with low inflation, a stable currency, low taxes, low interest rates. That's gone. So you're forced now, if you're smart, you're forced now to intelligently have I created this model for this very purpose, to understand and identify the inflation and deflation cycles. If you can accurately do that, you stand a chance of protecting and profiting during deflations and depressions and riding these bubble waves higher when they occur. So if you want to, you know, get in touch with me, it's mpento@pentaport.com. That's my email address. You can go on the website, pentaport.com, send the contact information, and someone will get back to you, and we'll let you know if you have about $100,000 to invest. You're more than welcome to come here, and you're a U.S. citizen. We'd love to take care of you. Thank you, Tim.
And folks, so that you don't miss a single interview with Michael or any of our guests, make sure you register for our free newsletter at libertyandfinance.com. Just put in your name, your email address at libertyandfinance.com, click submit. Make sure you confirm on the confirming email. You'll get one email per day in your inbox with our latest interview and our weekly specials. And Michael, people look forward to your visits here because you help us to keep, as you call it, a reality check. You keep our feet on the ground and see which way things are going right now, kind of like nowcasting back when I was in the weather industry. And if people look to you for that kind of sanity check, reality check, and we're grateful for your presence here on Liberty and Finance.
Well, in full disclosure, I want to say something about you. I've also purchased physical gold from you. I plan on doing more in the near future. I get nothing for doing that. There's no remuneration between the two of us. But I want to say that your quality of the services was unparalleled. You're really a fantastic operation there. And I will be buying. I'm not going to tell anybody what to do, but I will be buying more. But that's not why I come on your program. I think you have a fantastic audience, and I think you do a great job. So thank you.
Glad to have you, Michael. Thanks for coming back on.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.